But be assured that your divine life has a perfect divine plan and perfect divine wisdom to teach you how to live divinely and to teach you how to communicate this truth to others as they become ready for it. But remember, before you think of teaching others, you have a sacred responsibility to leave your nets and to learn for yourself how to move into the fifth world, how to connect your mind with your soul, to apply it, to prove it on your own life before you try communicating it to anyone else. There's something very beautiful about truth. When you get a little of it, it seems to expand. And that's what's happening right now. Truth is expanding within us. And it is when this happens that you recognize it is truth, because truth is never stagnant. It is always growing. Now let's return to the days just before your human birth. Refresh your mind with what was in your mother's mind at that time. And as you think about it, you can be certain of one thing. She was not thinking about herself as divine life, divine spirit, divine soul. Nor was she thinking that the child forming inside her was the infinite divine life that stretches way back for millions of years before the world began. It's more reasonable, as we originally presumed, that her thoughts were about you, your health, whether you'd be well formed, what color your eyes might be, would you be big or small, how long would she labor, things of that nature. Now, right here is the giant step. And it is a question that you have never been asked by anyone since the very first day that you appeared on earth. Carefully think of the precise moment just before your mother gave birth to you. And ask yourself, where were you at that moment? Where were you just before your body was born? Well, I did say it was a strange question. Now, you know, and I know, that out of 5 million people, probably 5 million will automatically respond, well, I was in my mother's womb, waiting to enter this world. Were you? Is that where you were? Are you sure that's where you were? Have you been studying that you are divine life, that you are eternal spirit, that you are the immortal soul, that you are the one indivisible life that has always existed, that you are the divine life of God, that you are the divine life that can never be sick or die. Is that the life that was in your mother's womb? Are you beginning to see where we're heading? You are about to discover a strange phenomenon, one that has escaped the attention of the entire medical profession, all of science, and practically all of the religious leaders in our world. Who is this child in your mother's womb? Just a few moments before an infant body emerged. Was it you? Is a material body divine? How do we even know that that body will make it into this world? There are many mothers who decide to have these embryos aborted. Would these mothers have power to abort a divine child? Could there be a stillborn divine child, or the miscarriage of a divine child? And yet there are hundreds of thousands of miscarriages and stillborn babies every year. Thousands are born deformed or retarded. How could a divine child be born deformed or retarded? How could a divine child ever become sick, diseased, disabled? How could a divine child become evil, corrupt, deceitful, starving, debilitated, or stricken by a virus or a heart attack? Could a divine child become a terminal case of leukemia, or have a heart disease, or end up in a sanitarium waiting for the final curtain to fall? Do you see? A divine child couldn't even die. All these things cannot happen to divine life. But they happen to millions of children who emerge from the womb of woman. Now please, we are into mysticism, so listen very closely to the most unusual truth that you may ever have heard. That child in your mother's womb could not have been you. You were never in your mother's womb. That was the message of Jesus when he said to his mother, "Woman, what have I to do with you? I am the life. And you too, and your mother too, and your father too, and your grandparents all must realize you were never in a material womb." And it's difficult, isn't it? But it's the truth you must know. To know God aright. For God is all. God life is all. And God's life never entered your mother's womb. When you become really conscious of yourself as divine life, not physical life, you will then understand how impossible it is for eternal, infinite, divine life to divide itself into fractions and to enter the temporary womb of a woman. You will see that your divine life has no human opposite. And that the illusion of spirit entering matter has deceived the mind consciousness of mankind. Something did happen, of course, on your so-called human birthday. You may, if you wish, think of it as a shadow of your soul. For as your soul passes from one level of consciousness to the next, something happens which we interpret as becoming a mineral, a vegetable, an animal, or a human being. But one thing is certain, your human birth was not the birth of your permanent self. It couldn't be, because your permanent self already existed. Your divine life has no birthday, no death day, no suffering day. Your divine life will never be shattered by a hydrogen or neutron bomb. On your birthday, a new mind consciousness was born. And it was born in the world mind. And it was a consciousness separated from God, separated from divine life, from spirit and soul. It was a consciousness limited to the five primitive senses of touch, hearing, smelling, tasting, seeing. It knew nothing outside of itself, nothing outside of its mentality, nothing outside of its mentally conceived form. And even when it matured, it had no way of knowing that it was only a shadow of its own reality. It was just a tiny mental cell. In a vast body. Thinking of itself as a separate, an individual body. Everything about it was reduced to a small counterfeit scale model. It reduced one infinite life to an interval called a lifespan. And the infinite newness of life appeared as a form breathing in, out, in, out. The infinite circulation of grace throughout your immortal spiritual body appeared as the circulating bloodstream of the human body. Eternity became time. Infinity became space. Unlimited dimensions were dwarfed down to three dimensions. Everything real was fragmented, finitized, and converted mentally. And in the center of this miniature recreation lived a tiny cell of consciousness, hypnotized into the belief that it was a man or a woman, aware of nothing outside the fourth box, which we know as the fourth world, and completely unaware that the temporary nature of its lifespan was because all of it, from birth to death, even its so-called human identity, was made of sense impressions picked out of cosmic energy. From invisible waves that are called electromagnetic by the scientist. By five feeble antennae that we call five senses. All this recorded, converted, projected by your brain into a mental image which walks the earth called form. Every human mind consciousness is a prisoner of cosmic energy. Humans are actually little relay systems for this ultra-speed invisible energy. They feed on it. They transform fractions of it into picture images that they call form, world, people, things, objects. And as we grow higher in our capacity to develop receptivity to this cosmic energy, great inventions and discoveries pour forth, and our hopes soar. We envision vast breakthroughs into unexplored mysteries. But inevitably, whenever a mind consciousness crumbles, the action of the body crumbles with it. We must be very alert, very perceptive. And if we are, and we look very closely, we discover that divine life and the cosmic energy that activates the human lifespan and the human body are not one and the same. The scientist is right when he says he cannot see God in the human scene. God is not with mortals, we know that. And when the scientist talks about human evolution, he's really talking about the evolution of cosmic energy in this fourth world. Inside the body formed by your mind consciousness, you are controlled and limited. And you are forced to live a temporary false lifespan, which, as you know by now, is not governed by God, but is governed by the false power of cosmic energy. which animates you until it finally kills you. And God does absolutely nothing about it. But when you learn to shift out of human evolution into your soul consciousness, instead of being human clay molded by cosmic mind, your soul takes over. You become the sculptor instead of the clay. Then your evolution is no longer inside cosmic energy which dies, but in soul energy which lives forever. You are then a spiritual traveler. You are released from false identity. You are reborn to your own divine life. We must face this because until you are ready to accept one, you were not born in the womb of woman. Two, you never were in the womb of woman. You are not accepting divine life. And as long as divine life is not what you accept as your true identity, you are really divided from yourself, denying your flesh on one hand is not enough. Accepting your spirit on the other hand is not enough. You must do both. To accept your spirit, you must deny your flesh. And when you deny your flesh, you must accept your spirit. Then you will be rid of the conflict of seeking God, seeking the treasures of the kingdom, while you are still laboring under the conflict of both the flesh and the spirit. This so-called conflict between flesh and spirit is actually the division between your soul and your mind. When you prepare to unite soul and mind, you are on the way to repairing the breach. And as you mend this breach, as soul surrenders to spirit and spirit surrenders to divine life, so mind must surrender to soul to provide the continuity from the highest to the fourth realm. And then you will escalate out of duality, out of oneness, out of dying life spans, into life. And then you will discover you are prepared to face all appearances in this world with a tested knowledge that the only you, the real you, is not physical form imprisoned in the fourth box. We're very grateful to all the mystics who wrote the Bible and all the other great scriptures. It was difficult for them to communicate divine truth to the masses, as you know. but they had an inner integrity which forced them to preserve their truth in a mystical code. Paul, as you know, realized that everything in the fourth box was a fiction, a picture image. He had touched the third heaven, had realized his divine life, had experienced his own immortality while on earth, and he recognized that Moses had also experienced the deathless self while he walked the earth. If you recall the astounding seventh chapter of Paul's epistle to the Hebrews, you can see clearly that Paul was explaining a very great secret taught by Moses, and bringing this secret to the attention of his, Paul's disciples. That's why he wrote, Melchizedek is without father, without mother, without descent, having neither beginning of days nor end of life, but made like unto the Son of God. What was Paul saying? He was teaching that Melchizedek had realized himself to be eternal divine life. Not human flesh, not cosmic energy, not a human being who must die. But now comes another great truth. Consider, says Paul, how great Melchizedek was, unto whom even the patriarch Abraham gave the tenth of the spoils. That's high mysticism. Abraham tithing to Melchizedek means that Abraham also recognized his own divine life. That's the mystical code. That he too was without father, without mother, without descent, without beginning or end, but that he was the eternal Son of God. And this, mind you, was before Jesus Christ. Divine life recognized is Christ consciousness. And it is the secret of every true prophet who ever walked this earth. It's a song of Solomon. It's a song of freedom sung by the mystics of all ages. But more important, it's the truth of you right now. You know, every time there's a virgin birth, there has to be a virgin death. You see this when Jesus is born without a physical contact between Mary and Joseph. That's really more than just an historical event. It's a mystical statement. It's a statement that the life of Jesus existed before his form emerged from the womb of Mary. Religion has not understood that divine life can never die, and there is no other. And therefore, crucifixion could not kill the virgin-born Jesus. The same divine life that existed before virgin birth continued to exist after the appearance of death. And that's a virgin death. Whoever accepts divine life is assured of a virgin death. And that is the hidden meaning of resurrection. Just as divine life is never born in the womb of woman, it never dies. But it is always present, even while mind consciousness uses cosmic energy to create the illusion of birth and death in form. Quietly now, it's necessary for you to dwell upon the truth that you never were in the womb of woman. And if you have believed that you reincarnated 50 times, then you should know that in those 50 so-called mothers that you had, you never were in one of the 50 wombs. You are divine life which never enters the material womb. And that is the purpose of your meditation now. To realize the truth of it, first intellectually and then to let the spirit and the soul flow into your consciousness to reveal to you the truth of eternal divinity in a way you never really suspected. We will go directly into our fourth lesson. No mother can ever give birth to divine life. No man and woman, through physical contact, can ever create divine life. It already exists. It is the God-given reality of every man, woman, and child. Unfortunately, this wonderful truth has been buried for centuries, while mankind has been forced to slush through the mud of original sin, divine punishment, and fictitious rewards in a heavenly hereafter. 100 million mothers who give birth every year have been told to put on the garment of immortality. But they did not understand. Instead, they have been denying the divine life of the infant consciousness that they have born into the world. when one of them stops and restores the divine heritage to one of these unborn children, that child will grow up aware of its divine life. When one mother blesses a child with its true identity and protects it with the consciousness of its own identity and knows her identity as divine life and knows that the true father of that child is divine life and that the true identity of herself and the child is the same one divine life, that child will be made free. Oh yes, I'm sure it would shock those 100 million mothers to learn that if they fail to identify their newborn children as divine life, and falsely identify them as flesh, those children will not be under the law of God. And they will be forced to spend the next 50 or 60 years wondering why the children they have born have grown into adulthood and still walk without divine protection. All of the human prayer in the world is not going to change a human being to divine grace, to divine power, to divine substance. It must be done by the expectant mother, by the expectant father, in order to give the child a beginning in truth. And when it is not done, then it becomes necessary for the child to learn it as he or she grows up. When Paul declared, "This mortal must put on immortality," he was stating a divine law. A law that cannot be violated. Your change of consciousness from mortal to immortal, from form life to divine life, is not something you can take lightly. It is not optional. Rebirth was taught by Jesus as more than a pledge that you make with your lips, more than a change of morals. Rebirth taught by Jesus is reunion with your eternal divine life, which never was born in your mother's womb. Please remember this. Every child born on earth is outside the law of God, because God is no respecter of persons, and no human opinion will change that. And that child remains outside the law of God until the mother or that child itself learns to put on the garment of immortality, the consciousness of its own immortal divine life, here, now, today. Not 100 or 200 years later when a Savior returns to earth. Now there are many corruptions of this sacred truth. One of them is the belief that your material body will someday become spiritual. And another corruption is the belief that your material body already is spiritual. Neither are true. Probably behind both of these false beliefs is the desire to remain in a body of flesh, trying to be both mortal and immortal at the same time. But, says the Master, no man can serve two masters. You cannot serve God and mammon. In other words, you cannot live in divine life and in human life at the same time. And if you're not living in divine life, you're living in mammon. The consequences are these. Divine life must live forever, mammon must die. It's quite that simple. And so Jesus was really saying, choose life. Don't choose death. And now it's necessary for us to catch the distinction. That the human sense of life, which lives in the body of dying flesh, oh, this is so important to catch. That human sense of life that lives in a body of dying flesh is not you. And this human sense of life which dies has never been you. That all human flesh is a cosmic concept. That all life within human flesh is an animated shadow in the mind. And this is the mystical understanding of the word mammon taught by Jesus in the 6th chapter of Matthew, verse 24. Divine life cannot flow in mortal flesh. Divine life cannot flow through the material womb of a mother who accepts mortal flesh and mortal life as her identity. We really have no choice. If we continue to identify as mammon, not divine life, we cannot inherit the kingdom of God. Whether it's spoken by Peter, Paul, Jesus, or John, the mystical truth is always the same. God is not the creator of mortal flesh. God is no respecter of mortal flesh. On the other hand, Jesus tells us, take no thought for your life. Why? Because the life that you worry about is not your life. The life that begins in your mother's womb and ends when your brain and your heart stop functioning is not your life. It's mental energy. Your real life, your divine life, is not influenced one bit by the birth or death of your physical form or the condition of your physical form. Because divine life is never influenced by the mental shadow for which mankind has been taking thought through all these centuries. Paul reminds us there is a natural body and there is a spiritual body. The first man is the earth of the earth, earthy. The second man is the Lord from heaven. Again, mystically speaking, Paul was revealing that salvation is not waiting for your reward in heaven, but now, here, accepting your divine life, which he called the Lord from heaven. And then rising above the belief that your life lives inside an earthy form that must die. Time and time again, Paul keeps opening this doorway to truth for all men. Awake, thou that sleepest, and Christ, meaning your true divine life, will give thee light. Stop lingering in bodies of mental energy that you know must eventually die. It's that simple again. Stop claiming a life that began on a birthday and ends on a death day. Choose God life, not mammon life. As we have borne the image of the earth, we shall also bear the image of the heavenly. When Paul said that, he was again telling mankind how to step out of the fourth box of a dying mind. As we have borne the image of the earthy, we shall also bear the image of the heavenly. By stepping out of the dying mind, the mind consciousness, the fourth box, into the fifth box, into our own eternal soul. Paul was so excited when he said this, because he knew he had an amazing discovery, that he couldn't resist adding a few words. Behold, I show you a mystery. We shall not all sleep. Meaning, there are some among us who are able to understand what I'm talking about. That the true miracle of life without beginning of end is the fact. Those who will grasp the real life, which is forever. And then he adds, and they shall be changed. They shall all be changed. In a moment. In the twinkling of an eye. For the trumpet shall sound. And the dead shall be raised, incorruptible. And we shall be changed. For the corruptible must put on incorruptibility or incorruption. And this mortal must put on immortality. What is that trumpet? That trumpet is your realization that you are divine life now. Who are the dead? The dead is a sleeping being. And a sleeping human race. Trying to live in dying bodies. The corruptible is the temporary mortal body of flesh that eventually disintegrates. The incorruptible is your permanent, immortal body of pure soul energy that never ages, never decays, never dies. Your spiritual body, which is activated by divine life under divine law, always expressing the harmony of God. This awakened consciousness knows that it is immortal. This awakened consciousness never dies. This awakened consciousness knows that death has no existence. It is the religious consciousness, still sleeping back there in the Middle Ages, that keeps singing the praises of Paul but does not share his wisdom. As a result, mankind today is continuing to sleep and to bear the miseries of his mortal dream. They're not accepting divine life in Afghanistan or in Iran, just as they did in Guyana. In our world today, all countries are ignoring divine life, while our physicians patch our bodies, while diseases ravage our bodies, while disasters destroy our bodies, old age cripples our bodies, bombs threaten our bodies, and eventually all who have not heard the trumpet of divinity are forced to lay down their bodies. Because unless we rise from the false deadness of mortal life, we remain in the fourth box. You know, during the past 16 years, every person who has come to me with a problem thought that he or she was seeking a solution to that particular problem. What they really were seeking was their own divine life. The problems were symptoms, evidence that they had not yet accepted divine life here and now. One problem could be a backache, another finances, a third would have a rocky marriage or a threat of malignancy. But the real solution always has been this. Not how do I get rid of this problem. That's not the real solution. The real solution is, how can I move out of mind consciousness into soul consciousness that knows itself as divine life? That's the real solution. That's the mystical meaning of seek ye first the kingdom. That's really the essential teaching of all the mystics and all the spiritual leaders. It's the secret of all the Hebrew prophets. Isn't that the understanding of Jesus Christ, Paul, Peter, and John? Isn't that the underlying theme of the New and the Old Testaments? Isn't the kingdom of God within you a revelation that you are divine life now? Isn't it that simple? Isn't every word and demonstration of Jesus Christ brought to an electrifying climax when he declares why he could accomplish these great things on earth? I am the life. And it was that life accepted which performed every miracle and revealed every word that he spoke. Our nets and the nets of mankind cannot be cast on the wrong side of the ship any longer. The human race seeks material improvements for material lives. And the results of that method are written in all the obituary columns on every newspaper. The key to survival, the key to salvation, is not bigger armies and navies and air forces. Not hiding in an atom bomb shelter. Not escaping on a satellite bound for Mars. The key to salvation and survival is living here and now in your own indestructible divine self. Instead of casting your nets in a sea of mortality, cast your nets into the divine ocean where there are no human lifespans that end, only one, infinite eternal life without division. And your nets will bring forth the blessings of divine peace, divine love and harmony, divine supply, and every treasure of the divine kingdom. Remember, you cannot fish in the divine ocean with your mortal mind. Only your soul can fish on the spiritual, immortal side of the ship. That's our direction, our opportunity, and our dedication. Between now and your next tape, please pick up a copy of The Infinite Way by Joel Goldsmith and read the fourth chapter, Your Real Existence. When I say read it, I mean devour it. Know it better than you know your own name. You've got a whole month for that. Go over each paragraph, study it, analyze it. Try to see that he is giving you condensed wisdom and that every word is worth 1,000 pictures instead of the other way around. He can say in one brief instant enough to fill 10 more volumes. And so very carefully scrutinize those words and understand that they are speaking to you pure Christ truth. Now also, during the next month, please go over the four lessons here on this tape. You'll find quite a number of meditations, particularly in the second lesson. There was one in the first at the end of it, and there's one in the third. Pick them all up and do them two ways during the month. One about yourself, but the second way is about your children or some others who are close to you, such as grandchildren, so that when you do a meditation on your own soul being present, the next time around, do it to know that the soul of the child or grandchild is present. The divine life of the grandchild or child is present. And in that way, your meditations will begin to bear more fruit.